From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 440, No More IPv4 with guest Ed Horley. Recorded Tuesday, September 29th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio, bringing back one of my favorites today. Ed Horley is back, and he's known as the crazy IPv6 dude, and has been playing around with IPv6 since the network stack was rewritten for Windows Vista way back in 2005. I remember those days. And now that Aaron has run out of IPv4 addresses to allocate out, he's dancing around in glee, telling random folks on the street, "See, I told you this had happened." Unfortunately, they mistake him for a crazy homeless dude. Oh, yeah, and he wrote this book about IPv6, too. Do people still read books?
I don't know if they still read books. They certainly don't read mine based on my cells, but
I have your book.
I deeply appreciate that.
Yeah. I have nothing but good to say about your book. And you know what I appreciate about you, Ed, is you're not that alarmist. Even though we genuinely are out of IPv4s now, at least on the RN side, I think there's still some in AppNic.
So there's still some in AffroNIC. Yeah, they're pretty much the last holdout. LACNIC still might have a few, but for the major portions of the world, that we're out.
Yeah, sorry. Nope, no more left. Ta-da.
I've never been an alarmist about it. I mean, the reality is we've engineered our way around all sorts of crazy solutions in terms of problem sets in the past. I don't think that will discontinue in the future. But
to the point where we've forgotten how much more complicated we've made networking.
Yeah, I think there's a certain amount of pain and suffering that we all go through.
Yeah, it's Stockholm Syndrome now. We just take subnetting for granted. You know, we don't actually have to do that.
Yeah. There's all sorts of fun stuff we don't have to do. September 24th was a big deal for North America because Aaron did exhaust their pool entirely. They're slightly different than some of the other RARs. So, some of the other regions in the world that actually allocate addresses actually kept like a reserve pool, we have a super critical need and we're going to go ahead and dip into this special pool of reserved IPv4 and we can fulfill your need for the short duration. Yeah, Aaron said, no, there's none of that. We just grind it to zero and then that's it.
Well, I also get the sense just reading their stuff, they want to be done. Really going to get this push to IPv6 is to run out of IPv4.
Right. That's exactly their argument. And they're like, this is how it's playing out. And I'm sorry you didn't make it into the pool. Guess what? We have this great new thing and it's called IPv6 and you can have as much of it as you like. And that's really their answer. I mean, you talk to John Kern, you talk to all the other folks over at Aaron. They're like, we just need to get this over with.
It's time. I mean, last time we talked, I think that was about a year ago. We were talking about how Comcast was, and nobody has any love for Comcast, and they've earned that, but they are really far down the path of implementing IPv6.
Yeah, so Comcast has clearly done huge hurdles in terms of the home market. I would say so. The residential market, Comcast has been a huge advocate, and hats off to them. I know a lot of folks don't like them for other reasons, but from a purely technical standpoint of adoption for V6, they have done a tremendous amount of work. And so those of us in the V6 community sort of tip our hat to them and the effort they put in. I mean, there have been others too. So Verizon has done tremendous work, especially on their mobile provider side.
You know, what's funny about Verizon is I have this weird double relationship with them because I do work on international networking so much.
Right.
And Verizon is, most people think of them as the U.S. cell carrier. Like they own so much undersea cable.
So, well, that was all the original MCI acquisition, right?
Yeah.
So that turned into Verizon Business and now is just part of Verizon. So they have a huge international footprint. They're incredibly important in terms of transport. They're, easily in the top, three of transport providers that you're more than likely portions of your traffic are going over Verizon at some point. But the interesting part for me, anyway, at least around Verizon, and specifically around Verizon Wireless, I don't know if most people know this, but if you're actually accessing Facebook across Verizon's wireless network, Verizon's claiming today that, you know, 80% of the traffic going to Facebook is V6 native.
Really?
Yeah. That's a staggering number.
That's a staggering number. Yeah, I just think this is really interesting that maybe from a consumer perspective, you're still V4 and you're probably NATed anyway. Virtually every ISP is doing that.
Right.
But if the backbone starts being all IPv6, like, that's good news.
Yeah. So if you're a Verizon customer and you're using, you know, your handset to be able to access Facebook, you're going native V6. So that's the really interesting part, is that this revolution in V6 is happening in a couple areas. It's happening in mobile providers,
mm-hmm.
because that's the only way they can onboard new customers. We're
right.
out of V4. Guess what? If you want to be able to grow, you need to hand out an address.
Unless you want to do this whole natting of doom kind of stuff, and people don't actually want to do that.
Yeah, it actually costs carriers more money to actually do that.
That's the magic number, isn't it?
Yes, that's the tipping point. Verizon and T-Mobile were both like, yeah, it costs us way more money to NAT with V4 or to build these weird scalability things. It's much more cost-effective for us to do native V6.
Well, and this just gets back to that original point of, we have convoluted IPv4 to keep it alive this long with subnetting and NATing and a bunch of other tricks. And the network gets way simpler when you just start using V6 addresses.
It really does. I mean, there are some challenges for very large carriers in terms of routing and other things, but those were true with V4.
Right.
So it really didn't change. You still have the same complexity. It's just you have a longer address to deal with right now, which is just more of a, you know, a typing constraint than anything else.
Yeah, but the routing tables are physically larger, digitally larger. Like, it stays storing more stuff.
Yes, yeah, you're storing more stuff. You're storing more bits of information. So the granularity is a challenge. How many routes you can hold in a route table?
Right. Well, and there's a whole other conversation here about BGP hitting its limits and, like, when
sure.
do we actually redesign this network? The networks that we've made.
Yeah, I mean, mentioning the mobile providers being one of the leading forces, I think obviously the residential providers, and then the content folks, right? Those are the sort of the three legs that V6 is standing on today. I think the new market that's coming into play is IoT. So
yeah.
This, you know, Internet of Things is requiring, you know, that from an adoption standpoint, that newer technologies have to be integrated in. How are you going to build these networks, and how are you going to build these sensor networks, and how are you going to build these, you know?
Well, it's just so many IPs.
Yeah, you need so many addresses. You need them to do different things. You need them to be self-servicing. So in other words, you need them to be able to just come on autonomously and do their thing and then just disappear.
Yep.
And all of those traits are really meant, lend themselves well to IPv6. I think the slowest adopters, as usual, right, is enterprise. Enterprise is going to take forever. That's the market that I play in. And
right. And you're talking about the internal enterprise side. I mean, I got to think that
even the external.
Really?
Even the external. Yeah. Yeah. I'm shocked and amazed at how many folks just don't want to address the issue of V6 at all. And I spend my day to day working in that particular mm-hmm. area. This is where I focus. And, I watch everything sprouting up around V6. And then the enterprise is really the slow adopter. Even the SMB market. Because of the forced changes that Apple is doing with being in the App Store, right?
Yep.
Your app has to be rewritten to support V6. It's a requirement for being in the iOS 9 App Store. That's a huge structural push on Apple's part to say, hey, this is how it's going to work. They changed the behavior of iOS 9 so that it prefers V6 over V4 now.
So it tries V6 first.
It actually prefers V6 in many different ways, utilizing some of the happy eyeball technology. So I think the structural changes that are going on are pretty significant throughout the industry, and the enterprise is just sitting back watching everything happen and not participating,
mm-hmm.
which is really sort of a shame, because I think if you look at V6 traffic overall, the weekends are when massive spikes for V6 traffic happen. It's
right.
when we all go home and watch Netflix and you know, over the weekend, or we're using our MiFi devices, or we're using, you know, our portable devices at home, and we're consuming content from Facebook or from, you know, YouTube or whatever else. V6 traffic shoots through the roof, and then we all go back to work and it drops back down. It's like, what's happening here? You know, and what's happening is the enterprises are refusing to actually deploy V6.
Interesting. I mean, the question is, does it buy them anything? Like, you hit on the most important thing. Like, the mobile guys are using it because the super natting is expensive. And so, okay, right, V6 is simpler and easier, so mobile's doing it. Like, what is that? When is enterprise going to see, wow, this is actually a better way to go?
I think that's going to be okay, so this is a multi-part answer.
Yeah.
I think the first and foremost is that no one is comfortable with it in the enterprise. So without familiarity, you will not deploy it.
Oh, I have a working solution. Like, the one thing that's not broken in my network is my V4 network. Like, there's all kinds of other problems, but I understand my DNS. I understand my DHCP. I've got my routing table set up correctly. I know where my firewall is. Like, why would I want to disrupt this?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, absolutely. Overcoming that is going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's the principal reason. I actually have a difficult time actually determining what it is, because it's partially head in the sand. I don't want to deal and learn something new. I think that's a common answer, and that's probably what you're addressing in the first part. The second part is that many of the manufacturers that build enterprise-related products just aren't there.
Really? So the high-end switches and routers that we're using,
the network gear is there.
Okay.
I think it's a lot of the security products that aren't as mature within, comparable features or functions.
Right.
So we talked really briefly about sort of functional parity versus feature parity, but let's just address sort of the functional one. I can get the same sort of functional end game result. I don't think a lot of manufacturers are completely there in terms of the functional side, never mind the feature side. And so if you're reliant on that particular, feature within a product, and it's not there either functionally or feature match one for one in V6, mm-hmm, you're not going to move.
Right. Yeah. You do want it to just, you're going to presume it just drops in. I mean, the discussion I've been having lately has been around security issues.
Right.
And the big thing here is just this recognition of you're going to get penetrated. So how do you deal in depth? And I'm trying to make the argument now, and maybe I'm just not qualified for this, that IPv6 has intrinsic network security advantages.
And so I don't know if it has intrinsic. I would say it's an opportunity to redo and reevaluate your security posture and how you do things. And maybe, how often do you get to hit the big reset button and start over again? I think that is an opportunity with V6. I think the structural problem with V6 is that people don't understand that there's different things that you have to tackle from a security perspective. And these are outside of the things that people are already familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And we get back to that first point, which is you're not going to tackle something you're unfamiliar with and then bet your career on, I understand how to do this. You're going to want to do everything else, every single stall technique you can do, which I've encountered this personally in terms of several engagements I've worked on, where the security team says, comes in and basically says, look, we're not going to deploy any of this technology because we don't understand it. And my first answer is, well, maybe you ought to learn it. And they're, reply back is we have too much to keep up with on the IPv4 side. We can't possibly keep up with any new protocol.
It's like, you're not going to need to keep up with the IPv4 side anymore if you move.
Right. And I don't know if that argument really holds for them. I have come across several engagements that we've been working on where V6 is actually a structural business strategic advantage.
Right.
And therefore the security team can't say that anymore. Yes. They can't say we just get to say no and you don't have any sort of tactical argument to come back with. And I simply say, look, this is a business requirement. You guys have to deal with it. Suck it up and it's time to learn. And then we're able to move forward. But until it becomes something where the business teams understand that this is a critical, important piece about how they're going to have business continuity, continuing market share, customer-driven engagement, all the other sort of business drivers that are important.
I don't V6. Know that you can make that argument, right? IPv4 delivers all of those things. When is this actually going to be a disadvantage?
So it becomes a disadvantage because now, today, believe it or not, with performance, Facebook has some interesting stats about actually increased performance for V6 over V4. So if you're in the market of trying to provide content,
right,
or you're in the market of trying to actually get eyeballs, being able to actually service them more quickly than your competitor is a strategic advantage.
Right. I mean, Google's ranking does account for performance as well.
Right.
So we're actually seeing that, web pages are slower via V4 than V6.
Yeah, so Facebook has some interesting stats because they're watching the V4 versus V6 in terms of traffic performance, and they actually see a global traffic improvement performance on V6 versus V4. That could just be that we don't have as congested a nets on V6 versus V4, which is quite possible, or we're not going through as many translation services because you don't need them anymore.
Right.
And so you're just getting faster performance. In addition, what are you going to do for all those folks that are on mobile-first platforms that want to get to you? You can either go through translation services with V4, or you can have a direct one-to-one relationship over V6. Plus, T-Mobile is V6 only on their mobile providing side. So you have to go through some sort of mandatory, 464 XLAT off the handset in order to spoof V4.
Yep.
You're going to go through double translation someplace along the line because of how their network's built. Verizon has some similar things. They're still handing out V4.
Yeah.
But you're getting RFC 1918 before, which means you're getting that translated someplace else. I don't see the structural advantage. And if you want to be able to own that relationship with that mobile handset user, right? You're building an app.
Yeah.
And you want to have unique understanding of what that individual is doing with the app. Being on V6 native and supporting it and having that at your edge really is a strategic advantage at that point.
Absolutely.
You're going to understand more about what that user's doing, how they're using your product, where they're going. Everything else that you want to know from a sort of analytics standpoint. And for the consumer on the mobile side, you're actually getting better privacy, which is a little strange to say because you're like, oh, you can get all this data. Well, they could get all this data anyway, right? Right.
So now they get it in a more coherent fashion. And right, give me one second to pay the bills because Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and the fighters of configuration drift. Configuration drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at scriptrock.com/RUNASRADIO. Now, I think you're hitting on the sensitive part for certain organizations, which is the majority of your customers are coming to you via mobile now, which is the area I'm seeing that we still have real performance problems. You know, that's a constrained network. You just don't have 100 megabit connections into your phone. So your giant pages are a problem and so on. And every advantage you could get, that's going to matter. That an IPv6, because it sounds like that's a big chunk of the native traffic for mobile now, that's where it could make the biggest difference for you.
Yeah, I really think so. I think mobile, and this is why I think it's so funny, because right, mobile residential and the content delivery side, you know, whether that's Facebook or YouTube or Netflix or whoever else on the content side, or Google's properties, I think all of those are driving this three-legged stool for V6. And then there's the whole rest of the world that's sitting off on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Comcast says their V6, native V6 is above a quarter of their overall traffic today. And, it's for Facebook, they're seeing, I think, IPv6 usage in the U.S., so just the U.S., is 23% of Facebook's total traffic. So if you just look at the trajectory of growth, and Richard, we've talked about this for years now. Mm-hmm. I think in 2011, we were doing some interviews about on his radio about, you know, the IANA running out of addresses and talking about it back then. I think we were talking fractions of a percent. back. So if you think from then over 4 years to we're over a quarter, if not more, depending on which networks you're on. But, you know, for the United States, a quarter of overall traffic is V6 already. If you just look at the curve, if this was any other industry and we were talking about any other thing, not being on that new thing that was consuming that much growth rate curve, you'd be like crazy. It'd be like not adopting mobile like, you know, 2-3 years ago. It'd be like, you're crazy. If you're not paying attention to mobile, you've missed the boat. And I really feel like this transition that we're going through now, like 2015, is V6 is suddenly dropped on the map, and there are a lot of people that just aren't familiar or know it. And, you know, part of the reason that I like talking to you is to get a chance to put it back on people's radars of like, oh, this is something I actually need to pay attention
really
to.
Really need to pay attention to. I mean, one of the reflexes I would have is go put it in the cloud, because most cloud providers, I think all cloud providers, are providing IPv6 addresses these days.
Well, that's a challenge, right?
Oh.
So AWS still doesn't have, they've still got load balance services in classic mode, but anything in VPC still doesn't support V6. Rumor mill, purely rumor mill, is that within the next year, they will have V6 support within their environment. I haven't gotten any sort of status updates out of the Azure team around where they sit with V6. Today, they do not support V6 in their public portions of their cloud. You can't even run in either environment. You can't run V6 as even an overlay protocol within your own cloud environment. So those are challenges for those two bigs. That's number one and number two, right? AWS and Azure. One and two don't have support. There's some, slightly further down the list, SoftLayer has V6 support, DreamHost and handful of others do have V6 support. I'm really waiting for number one and number two to get there. I have a feeling within the next year, both of them will have that released out. There's a lot of structural things they had to change in early to support V6. So I have a feeling, how quick can you get this, get stuff refactored within their environment to be able to support it. It's not a minor change.
Especially when you're talking about, I mean, those guys are doing everything they can to keep the cloud alive in the first place. Like,
right.
It'd be very challenging for them. They, you know, you talk about the edges of networking complexity. I think these public cloud hosts, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, like, that's it. They're doing things nobody else is doing. And it's until I suspect once one of them does it, the others will do it very quickly.
Right. Yeah, that's the hope. I mean, it tells you a lot. Google's pretty much dual stacked everywhere across the board. Mm-hmm. And even GCE doesn't support V6.
Interesting.
I think that gives you a pretty good idea about how much of a challenge it is for, you know, someone to build these sort of environments. It's not that, you know, Kubernetes or Mesos can't support or won't support it from a scheduling perspective to move workloads around. And with the new models with containers, I actually think there's a possibility that we will get to V6 quicker. Docker has pretty good V6 support natively inbuilt, especially when it came out 1.5, 1.6. It has a lot more support built in natively. So I think the underlying tools are all there to make this a reality. The problem is that, you know, all three of those large cloud providers, you know, they really custom wrote everything to get all this to work. And that's a lot of code that they have to go refactor through to get something as simple as because it's foundational. It's not something where it's a feature that runs on top. It really is foundational across everything. And if it's going to be foundational like that, that touches a lot of things.
For sure. And you mean, in theory, there's some advantages for them to be V6 top to bottom and to just do maybe translation at the edge.
So that's definitely something they could do, but there are some unique service offerings that are out there. So let's talk about how you would solve this for cloud.
Sure.
So folks like Cloudflare, mm-hmm. which is, you know, just got a crazy amount of money from Microsoft and a handful of others on a new round. So congratulations, Matthew Prince. and team, you know, over at Cloudflare. They do a great service. And, you know, if you want to be able to turn up, they leave by default if you go in and sign up for their service to be able to do sort of CDN content caching to improve your site performance. They leave by default V6 on. So the moment you click up and sign up for their service, you're going to get V6 turned on automatically. By them doing this, they have generated an insane number of sites that are now IPv6 enabled, even for that small to medium tier size company that maybe traditionally wouldn't have gotten that, but needed to just be able to, you know, handle, you know, being Slashdotted or Reddited or whatever else in terms of their site performance.
And not a lot of CDNs that offer IPv6.
So all of them actually have it as a service. So Akamai has full V6 support and capabilities.
Right, but you have to buy it separately.
Yeah, and it's not clicked on by default. You actually have to hit the button to select it. And they are working very, very hard right now to actually make that so that it's actually the default position is actually to have it on. So they're going through that transition right now. They're starting to figure out how they want to make that happen. They had a very good presentation at the World IPv6 Congress talking exactly about that, about how they were going to make that transition to get it to be a default on property versus a default off property.
Yeah, no
kidding. It's a lot more work involved than I thought for something as simple as a checkbox.
Think of just be there. Like, you're always going to support V4, right? Like, nobody's taking V4 away here. So just adding in V6 on terms of just servicing or providing static resources, that sounds like something should be simple to do.
It should be. I think it has more to do with retrofitting and supporting their older customers who may not have the capability or have specific apps that are written around V4 behavior that might have some breakage due to the fact that they flipped on V6 for them.
Yeah.
And addressing those, right? And you have some, they support some very, very large customers. They want to make sure they're not breaking things for people. So they have to go through a
lot of tests. Yeah, CDNs are another one of those businesses where if you break your customer in any way, you are in huge trouble.
Right.
No,
you're paying penalties at that point, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think Limelight has V6 support. So, I mean, it's definitely, you know, Cloudflare is the current, you know, sort of media darling right now in the industry. And rightfully so. They've done some incredible work and they have some very bright people over there. But I think it was easier for them, right? They came in and said, day one, we're just making this V6.
We're doing this from top to bottom.
Yeah, you know, if it doesn't work for you, the moment you turn it on, you just turn it back off again.
Right.
That's your decision, but we're turning it on. We make everything that we do work with it on from day one, and this just really isn't up for debate. And by doing that, they really sort of have been changing that. But once again, we're talking about that sort of SMB to smaller market. Mm-hmm. There are some enterprises that are using them, and the enterprises are using them to get V6 services turned up. But as you'll once again recognize, that's at your internet edge. This doesn't do anything for your clients internally and them being able to access. And just like I mentioned earlier, that weekend spike of V6 traffic has everything to do with us being at home, consuming content and then back to the office, and it drops off again. And the reason why is we don't have it in our office.
Right.
And that's the real, crux of what I'm trying to get after. I mean,
sure.
Microsoft has had wonderful V6 support for ages. I mean, for a very long time, Dave Thaler and team, you know, completely reworked the networking stack.
Well, yeah, like you said, right in your bio, Vista, I mean, there was a lot wrong with the Vista network stack. You know, turning on the variable MTU by default, that was simply a mistake. Making it almost impossible to turn it off was just mean. But, you know, a lot of that got fixed in Service Pack 1.
Right.
And, you know, but honestly, the stack, like, as a web performance guy, 2003 R2 was the fastest Windows TCP/IP stack for a long time. I think only in 2012 R2 are we finally seeing the same kind of performance numbers we had from that old stack.
Yeah, I'm actually interested to hear your opinion about, have you been doing much with Windows 10 in terms of performance and
testing? No. And of course, Server 2016 is still in community preview, so I'm not really worried about it all that much.
Yeah, I haven't noticed a lot of structural differences for V6 in the Windows 10 testing that I've been doing, which is sort of expected because, to be quite honest, V6 now on Windows is actually relatively mature, which is a funny thing to say.
Yeah, V6 works well enough in your average Windows network today. You don't even know you're using it.
Right, and you shouldn't have to worry about that part of it. I do want it to be a better, more managed resource versus how it's dealt with today, and that definitely people wrapping their arms around it and saying, oh, I understand, and I need to start learning in order to be able to manage this resource on my network. Mm-hmm. Most people just don't recognize that it's running around and doing things, or they sit there and say, oh, you know, the sky's falling, we need to turn it off everywhere.
Turn everything off because I don't understand what's going on. And as soon as I have any problems of any kind, I'm going to blame it.
Yeah, exactly. And it just seems to be the wrong approach for understanding and utilizing something that's going to be, you know, key critical to you in a year or two because everything's going to convert over. Mm-hmm. I think the funny part is that probably within the next 5 years, we're going to see the entire market shift where V4 is going to be a service on top of V6.
Right. Yeah, that's the line we're headed towards now.
Right, exactly. We're just going to be tunneling V4 across V6. And so the interesting part is your backbone, as things mature over the next few years, your backbone will literally be of internet will literally be V6. And then if you want to talk V4, you're automatically being tunneled. And, you know, I don't know if that's an optimal solution because it's definitely going to have performance related problems, and you're going to have all the difficulty that tunneling brings.
Yeah. Well, this takes us back to that conversation back in 2011, where the reality was making V6 work meant doing all that tunneling, which was going to impact performance to some degree.
Right.
And now that's sort of turned on its head. Now the fast way to go will be doing V6.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm super excited because I've been waiting a mere 10 years for this event to happen.
Well, you wouldn't take this on if you weren't a patient guy.
Yes, this is true. This is true. I mean, is that my virtue? I don't know if that's a virtue or not, but I am excited about
that. Or you get another industry, right? I mean, up here in Canada, the support for IPv6 from our providers is horrifyingly bad.
Yeah, it's pretty dismal.
It is dismal. There's no other way to describe it. We have all of the disadvantages of regulated services, regulated internet, with also all of the bad parts too, right?
Like, right.
We really, that have not done a good job of governing them. They kind of run roughshod over us and they are holding things back. So it's, I don't know that deregulation is the answer. I'm not automatically a, you know, big buyer of deregulate all the things.
Right.
But I do think, we haven't done a, certainly have not done a good job up here.
Yeah. And that's a standards body push and a government push, right? The government saying, hey, you know, we need to join. We need to keep up with what's happening. And this is in the best interest of our citizens to be able to be first class within what's happening on the internet today, to be able to be competitive in the data center market and, the hosting market and the, you know, the data and intelligence and applications market. You need to have V6 support. I mean, what, I think the challenge will be for them is does the entire market transition to all wireless carriers in order to be able to get all those services?
Yeah. Well, and the problem is the wireless carriers up here are the same guys. So it,
Right. But the agility that they have on their footprint on the wireless side, it's more acceptable to change things quickly on that side versus say, maybe your wired transport.
Yeah.
For residential or for commercial business. So I think that there might be an opportunity there.
Yeah,
I'm trying to give you some hope, Richard. That's all.
I'm trying to. And I'm the guy that's got three different providers coming into the house. So, you know, I'm always keeping an eye on what's actually available.
Right.
But, I'm still running that little data center in my house. And
well, I feel your pain.
Everybody else has moved to the cloud and I'm still hanging on to a few bits. But every time I've got to go, you know, do a major revenue, it's like, I could move this to the cloud. I could make this go away.
Lift and shift.
Yeah. But on the other hand, I have 20 something daughters who spent their entire lives with the belief that the only reason the internet doesn't work is they haven't done their chores. So,
I don't know if that's a strategy that will last that much longer for you.
No, it's kind of, it's one of those things, right? But I have had them come down, and ask me if they could speak to their administrator.
That's funny. That's funny. So I have a rule in my house, for my daughters. I actually put this in my book. I was like, you know, if you guys can hack the router and get around it from my time of day access rules and everything else, then you're mature enough to get out on the public internet.
Right.
Until then, you're on my regulated service.
You're locked down. And just be prepared. Don't think that breaking it once means you're done. It means we go the next round too.
Right, right.
No, that was definitely a household that I lived in as a 20-something hacker back in the day. I was hoping my kids would step up to that, but not so much. They'd rather clean the kitchen and get it turned back on.
Yeah, she just switches over to her cell phone. She's like, oh, fine. I'll just drop off the wireless. well, at least she's smart enough to figure that out.
Yeah, to understand that there's a difference in the network. Not that the internet is down.
Right.
So, Ed, what's next for you? Where are we going to see you? Is there another book coming? Is it time to rev the IPv6 book?
Yeah, you know, I don't think there's another book coming. I am working on another Pluralsight course. So I have my first Pluralsight course out and about. And so that one's the introduction one. And I'm actually working on a Windows IPv6 Pluralsight course now. So that's
fantastic.
The next thing you'll probably see drop for me. And then I'm going to be doing the regular conference circuit. So hopefully I'm waiting to hear back, but I'm hoping I'll be at Interop and Cisco Live and a few other bigger name shows. And, I don't know. Should I be attending Ignite? Did you have a good time at Ignite?
I had a great time at Ignite as long as you didn't eat the food.
That's what I heard.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I have been to a lot of conferences in a lot of years, and that was a new low.
Wow.
And I would presume that I could think of a dozen reasons why that might have happened.
Right.
But I know they signed a 3-year deal. It's got to be better next year. You got to hope.
So you and I need to sit down and write an app together for food delivery service.
Something like that. Well, you know, they had a food court in the facility. So it's almost like, hey, you know, people just went there instead. But for the price of the ticket, it's not a cheap ticket. You should be able to eat it. But, you know, hanging out with, I'll tell you something. There is an energy to hanging out with 22,000 of your fellow geeks. You know, there are very few times in your life where you're going to be surrounded by that many people that care about stuff you care about, as esoteric as our world may be.
Yeah, I mean, I sent a good chunk of my team to Ignite, but I just couldn't make it this year, and the whole speaker submission thing was
very odd.
That's the polite way of
putting it. Very odd. That's the nicest thing I can say about it. having been involved in tech ed since the 90s and working on literally hundreds of conferences, they did stuff at Ignite that just made me scratch my head.
Yeah. So, you're much more polite than Don Jones was about it.
You know? Yes. you know, living where I live means I'm down in Microsoft almost every month. And, you know, sometimes you have to just let them make mistakes. I just hope that they see them as mistakes.
Yeah.
They sold that crazy show out. You know, on one hand, you could go, you know, you're fine. You filled it. But you know how badly you have to mess up not to fill that show? So I hope they'll do better. I will help them do better. As a fellow content planner, I'm willing to contribute my time.
Yeah, you've always been awesome on that. I mean, I really appreciate it. I mean, I got to participate. I mean, I got to do Speaker Idol 1 year.
Yeah, so. Back in the day, they did not want Speaker Idol at Ignite.
Yeah,
so we didn't do that. Who know? I hear there was an outcry. Maybe it'll be back next year.
Well, I hope so, because you always did a fantastic job. I mean,
that's our secret mechanism for pointing out speakers that haven't navigated the labyrinth that is getting to be a speaker to show like that, but clearly have the skills.
Yes, yes. Well, that's awesome, because I know quite a few folks who have, you know, I mean, Aiden did an awesome job when I got to Wadham and
watch
him at the Tech Ed, the last Tech Ed in Houston. He just, you know.
And our friend Jessica DeVita, too.
Yeah, Jessica, and she's over at Chef now.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Good for her.
Yes. Yeah, good for her.
We better wrap it up, man. We're way over time, and we have too much fun talking to each other. Ed, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
I really appreciate the invite. And hey, everyone, get IPv6.
Get IPv6. It's time. Time now. Thank you, Ed. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.